I'm Isawellen, and this is Isawellen Writes Stories for Adults, or Isawellen Story Times, or Stories with Isawellen. I'm reading Caught, Chapter 9. The girl had three knives on her. From a male point of view, I need to get a friend to do this if you want to volunteer to read the male parts. You just reach out to me. Please comment. Please reach out to me. Comment. I would love that so much if I could get a guy to come and read these male parts. This is a romance-y, a fantasy novel. And I'm just going to start reading chapter 9. And I have some messages, some stuff to chat about at the end. And hopefully all of this will be in order when I put it up on the Audible. Thank you so much for listening. If you are enjoying this story, if you could like it and comment and rate it wherever you are listening from, that really will help me get a bigger audience, which is kind of, you know, the point. I'm giving this story away. It's my rough draft, owned by me, copyrighted by me. For free, for you, the audience, to see. I kind of want to know what you think. Do you like it? I had, there are a couple people actually listening to this story, so that is why I'm going on. We are continuing on. I did have this story posted on my Ream. I will have it posted again. I am working my way through some insecurities about the story, I guess, and reading it out loud to you and your feedback will help me, encourage me to keep going. So, this is chapter 9, Calyx. The girl had three knives on her. Thank you for joining me. I'm also reading this on TikTok, people, so words may be fluffed over, as they say. An ugly noise squeaked from his chair as he pushed it back from the table. The girl shrank from him, not knowing what to expect. A contradiction of bluster and fluff, a pretty pale-skinned native face. She wore men's clothes and stank like a shit house. "What are you going to do?" she asked. There were several things he wanted to do. Throw her in a bath, gag her mouth, make her listen to reason. Calyx's first colored witch, treating his interest like a forest badger would treat a bear. She didn't trust him, didn't want him, and would fight to the death for the sake of arguing. He couldn't be positive she was a witch. She was so adamant and unresponsive to his allure. Brassy and foul-mouthed, the little thing didn't act like any of the native females he knew. Not a single one of them. Nothing about her made sense. Her face, her clothes, her boldness, the loose tongue mixed with the tangible fear as thick as her stink. All her emotions were exposed on her expressive face. None of them complimented Calyx or his men. Excluding the hounds, her eyes, her mouth, everything about her body language went soft when it came to his hunting hounds. They shared an unnatural, out-of-place affinity for one another that required an explanation. He'd inhaled her breath, had her pulse beat under his hand. Unbelievably, there was no showing. And yet, the ancient magic of the collar, a thing spirit-tied to his own being, slipped around her neck as agile and easy as water. The ends connected and solidified under his fingers, creating a forever bond he wasn't sure he would be able to break under any circumstances. He'd taken a chance based on her interactions with the hounds. Now they were linked together, one way or another. She'd never be able to take it off. They both knew that. He'd seen the realization drain the blood from her face and watched her hands ball up tight. Her big eyes went bright bird's egg blue, glistening with unshed tears. The little witch knew she'd been fully caught. Yet still she mouthed off, denying the obvious truth, thinking him a fool. The girl had her shine swallowed down so deep his allure found nothing to call. Told him she couldn't mingle with him. Told him his eyes were wrong. What was this? He knew what she was, what she had to be. A witch couldn't hide her involuntary reaction to a mage any more than a mage could hide his. A witch couldn't block that reaction, prevent a mage's personal aura from calling her. It was impossible. It didn't happen. Yet it was happening. He raged out to her. She sat way back in her chair like he meant to strike her. Still, Kallax said. He placed his gloved hands over hers. No shine, no allure, no promise of magic. She pulled her hand away from him, frowning at him in an offended disapproval like some high-born city lady. She was native, a magicker. His hounds were not little friendly pets that random strangers had the balls to approach. No one approached them. Their dark magic aura sent native and gnoll alike running. No one touched them, pet them, engaged with them in any way. They were doom hounds, hell hounds, death bringers. The price he paid to put a collar on one would stay forever with Kallax. The price he paid to walk with the pack of five doomhounds was etched into his bones, promise and debt scarred into his organs. Those endless days of torment visited his nightmares regularly. That price had been high for the reward of their loyalty. But this girl? The lead bitch, one, licked her face. The girl did nothing, paid no price, made no deal, and the pack wagged their tails, circled by the hound's doom aura, seemingly unaware of its effect. Annika pouted with annoyance, irritated by the deadly creatures. They wanted her to stay and play. They whined in distress when Kallax asked Gage and Max to take her inside the pub. Max and Gage watched him, both nervous with his mood, unaccustomed to him allowing the things this woman said. Unaccustomed to any woman talking to them this way. Accusing them of using children, of forcing unwelcome relations on witches. They both expected the explosion from him they felt building in themselves. Instead, Kallax felt oddly calm. He turned to them to give them some relief. Go and talk to the Void Girl and the Tavern Men. Talk to everyone. I want answers. Can we play then? Max asked. If Stahl is lurking, I want those answers to go. It was a busy night at the tavern. Everywhere Kallax and his men went, tugs wagged, tales were told, kicking up trouble. Coming here to look at Stahl's wares, Kallax had anticipated some interest, but the girl had changed things. Unlike her, he and his men brought attention to themselves wherever they went. Eyes watched everything. Kallax had found an unclaimed witch, and she was leaving this place with them, but he wanted to do that quietly, and as soon as they could. Can I go with them? I have work in the kitchen. She stood up. Sit down, she did, plopping back down into the chair with a mean little frown. People are going to be drinking out of dirty cups. I don't care. You would care if it was you drinking out of a dirty cup. He shook his head. The girl had been hiding in New Indio in plain sight since the day of her gleaming, when she came of age and presented as a native able to draw magic, and yet no one noticed. More mysteries. How old was she? How long has she had magic? How long has she been hiding? How was any of it possible? Her clothes, her smell, her big attitude, working for Jack, added up to a bad disguise, but for whatever reason, it worked. The patrol, and who knows who else, had walked right by Annika, leaving her alone, unclaimed, unprotected. Not for a moment did Kallax see anything but a female native. A delicate, heart-shaped face and feminine, sleek, pale blonde hair down to her butt, spilling over her shoulders with tints of silver, screaming her gender. scrap bindings, little ties she likely used to keep her hair pulled back under the old cap she'd been wearing, came loose in the slick strands while she sat in front of him. Seemingly pulled by gravity and knocked loose with her constant agitated twitching, even as if her hair had a will of its own. In his boyhood, there'd been stories of witches with hair controlled by the witch spirit. The bespoke women of his household teased each other whenever their fancy braids and configurations were out of place. "Get control of your witch," they'd say. But Calyx knew the difference between grooming issues and hair that could do what it wanted. As he sat there, another band popped loose, falling to the floor in the softest snick, and a lock of hair unraveled like a rope tied too tight. The girl didn't even blink in reaction. She also acted as if Calyx were not sitting right there, watching her hair unravel itself from braids and bands she tried to control it with. Calyx knew the stories of powerful witches from the Unifiers started their war. From before the Unifiers started their war to bring balance. That type of native woman had been gone so long, most thought they were just exaggerations. He was going to take Annika to his librarian, Pollux, and confront her with these recorded passages. Pollux would have answers. "What do you want from me?" she asked him. Answers. Everything about her was a question. Answers? Answers, indeed. Answers are what you are going to give me. He moved in the chair again, and she flinched away, a creature accustomed to being hit. Witches had a reason to be afraid of mages, but the energy of male and female created when they mingled dismantled those negative feelings, drawing them together like magnets, bypassing fear. Adult, unbonded males and females couldn't resist each other. It was well known. Calyx had never been a recipient of so much fear and animosity from a female. The girl was younger than he was, had grown up in a world policed by patrols where every creature was viewed as a power source or an enemy. The proctor warped the beauty of the mage and witch connection with his laws of balance in various ways. It was difficult to be a female native in any region where he and his unifiers maintained a foothold. But fear wasn't enough to circumvent nature. Not yet. And no unclaimed witch of any power walked by Calyx without noticing him. Not since he came into his own gleaming. If this girl hadn't been petting the hounds, he never would have noticed her. "Take this thing off my neck first," she pointed emphatically at the collar. "First lesson. You don't tell a mage what to do. A witch's nature is to give her magic and yield her body." Her face went comically red, fair eyebrows climbing into a hairline. "First lesson. Are you an intellect from the consortium? And that's the first lesson? Where's your chain and robe and skeleton suites? Little far from the silly city halls, aren't you? And your boyos, are they correctors in disguise? Here to protect you because you can't take care of yourself?" Working in this pit of a tavern, the girl said things she must have overheard others say, challenging him with off-color insults that would get her hurt. She'd mentioned that pub man beat her. Calyx believed it. "What do you know of skeleton suites?" he asked her. "Nothing satisfies a mage allure, and one woman is never enough. Men like you destroy everything they touch. Skeletons sound about right. That's what happens to overused women. So you're going to do that? Use this collar on me like that? Power up? Drain me dry? Make a pet of me? A skeleton, sugar?" "Deandra Data," he cursed in the old Indonesian, interrupting her before she said something truly crude. "You get that mouth from the farmers around here? Who told you that shit?" Her lips twisted mulishly tight, eyes sparkling. She'd been testing the collar. Clever witch. Seeing if she could control her mind the way it controlled her body. Calyx didn't know everything about the magic's workings. He'd used it once before. Like one's collar, the primeval magic connected to his will and his own inner energy source with the ilium. But he hadn't made it, so he wasn't really sure how it worked. You don't want to play games with me, Batai. I know that Void Dancer has lived in this town since she was a girl, and you admitted she's a relation. Do you think I'm not going to get answers? You're just encouraging me to teach you some self-control. There you go with the intellect talk. The consortium sent a Void here once, a trained intellect schoolmarm. She knew all the stuff. She didn't last long. Sweet lady came here on a unification mission to help us poor, stupid country folk teach us how to read and write. What do you think the local Blix did with her? Are you on a mission like she was? You look more like a correction soldier. Are you with the Proctor and his men, or are you with the consortium? She was more right than she knew when it came to his looks, but Calyx was tired of listening to her nonsense. Pulling her arm across her chest, he watched her wince and filed it away to examine later, exerting his will on the collar. Come to me. Her body obeyed, gracefully opening up to him and standing. Hissing between teeth and blue eyes sparkling violence, Calyx knew she wanted to fight. His control through the collar was seamless, painless, and unquestionable. Leave me alone. Take this evil thing off. His will cradled her, held her lightly under his compulsion, ilium at her neck. Turning fully toward her, Calyx had her step very close. She wore the strangest, ugly male layers on her body, at least three coats, pockets everywhere, overlong swings, sleeves hanging past her wrists with only fingertips exposed, belts with bags tied to them hung from saggy pants under a slick wash apron. The girl was a lumpy, ragged mess. Give me the knife. He sent the mental command rather than ask, so she couldn't argue and try to mislead him and tell him she had no weapons. Her body answered with what her mouth wouldn't hold, handing him three little metal-edged blades. Fingertips flicked and twitched as she pulled her hands back, denying him skin-to-skin contact. You have no right! He threw the blades into the wall across from them, high above where she could reach. I did nothing to you, she said. What could I even do? I did nothing to your precious puppies. Ran into them on the way out. They were just there. You gonna add me to your skeleton women now? Is that it? You gonna take me? I'm not what you think I am. I'm null kind. Funny how you don't claim to be a void. You look like one. I'm too fat for a native. They all have heart rates of sprites and hummingbirds. Or don't you have eyes in your head? There is some void in my family line, but I'm still null plane, earth and stone. Why can't you see that? Do you see any shine coming out of me? Do you see me rubbing against any mages like a cat in heat? Do you see me losing my mind over a man connected with the unifier? She presumed too much. His history and connections were not hers to judge. I am not a unifier, little witch. I am not a Proctor's man. I am not an intellect from the Proctor's consortium. I am not one of those trained geezy correctioners or here with a city patrol. Is that clear? She ignored everything he told her. You must be working for them. You must be. Why can't you go back to where you come from? Nobody wants the likes of you here. I am here. You are here. Now, under my protection. I'll take you home, and you can work in my kitchen. How would you like that? You have no one here. And if you are null, where is your family? Where is your man? You need protection, clearly. Take me home. I don't need anything from scum like you. My people died, and people here know better than to mess around with underage girls like you. then it's time for a lesson to learn control that mouth and answer me when I ask you something. You have no rights to me.
I'm taking rights, Kellick said.
I don't recognize your false rights. I'm not a witch. I'm a free woman. I don't have to do anything you say.
You will do everything I say, Mo Cadaliche. The endearment sleeped out, the opposite of what he wanted to call the little snarling Batai. Her right eye twitched every time he used the ancient tongue, a language she shouldn't know. Everyone who spoke the native Indonesian lay dead and buried, or were caught up in patrol nets and conscripted as slaves to a city somewhere. How would she know that language?
Her face twisted, preparing to spout some ugly in his direction. Kellick had had enough.
Quiet! No more talking. Shut that sour mouth of yours, little witch.
He put his will behind the words, before sitting forward in his seat and creating a lap for her.
Second lesson. When a witch is rude or ill-behaved, it is her protector's responsibility to correct her. Now come, take your correction.
Her immediate horror was palpable, signs of it all over her shaking frame. Kellick ignored it. If the girl didn't like him touching her, she would hate what he was going to do next. If the humiliation stayed with her, he wouldn't have to repeat it. He couldn't tolerate that mouth. The Knoll women of Little India were more forward than in the larger towns and cities, knowing the men here were afraid to harm what they couldn't replace. But this witch was pretending to be an underage Knoll, was more than bold. She was outrageous, challenging him to respond. Silenced by her will, his will, her body obeyed, the action awkward because she didn't know what to do. In spite of her mouth, she clearly had no experience with any kind of discipline. He held back on guidance and comfort. The girl earned this, and he'd lost his mood for patience.
Bent over his lap, she tried to find a way not to touch him. Kellick waited, curious how the command would work on her. His will knew what it wanted. A minute ticked by, the girl breathing heavily, before she went to her knees, stretching her upper body over him, ass up for the spanking he planned to deliver. Stinking like she rubbed her clothing in piss and dung, he had to breathe through his mouth. Damn! He thought the smell a minor deterrent, but this close he could feel the smell. It pushed at his senses, warning him away. Suspicious dark spots stained her outer jacket. As soon as they left the pub, that thing was finding a burn pit. A bespoke witch is a subject to her protector. It's his duty to make sure her behavior is proper, to keep her respect, to show her a place in the world, Kellick said to her, a line he'd used often. When he found a witch of power on the other end of a bounty contract hunt, he took her with him. When he left, It was usually a bad situation for everyone involved, and the women would rather go with him than a patrol. He believed, in his core, having witnessed the mutual respect between a witch and her mage, and the things they could do together. That was so long ago, fragmented memories of a world that really no longer existed, but he remembered the feeling of it as if in a dream. The admiration in his father's face when he looked at his mother. Your place in the world is at the side of a mage, bringing balance, he added, pulling back her jacket and outer layers. Do you agree? He'd freed her to speak. He had to know what was going on in that head of hers. The clothes made her look short, round, and bulky, but under them were shapely curves. He felt softness against his knees along with her wildly beating heart. Do I agree? She shrieked. I am not a witch. I am not of age. Her denial sounded panicky, as if he'd planned to force himself on her pale little body right here in this disgusting pub, in the tiny back room that stank of soured ale and old no sweat, and her. You're not of age for what? For what? I'm not the fool you think I am, sweet little witch. If you tell me what I want to know, control that mouth of yours, I won't give you a spanking. This time. He fingered her belt for emphasis, pulling at it as if to remove it, and exposed her round behind. You scum-filled wastebasket, she spat. I'm just a girl who washes dishes. I did nothing bad. I was helping. Do you spank your boyos when they get mouthy? Pull those big guys over your lap? Do you smack on the hounds? What kind of lowlife abuses someone weaker than they are like this? She screeched to him like an old kitchen wife, giving him more defiance, asking for the spanking. Calyx wasn't sure if this discipline was the best for the wild girl, but the behavior couldn't be ignored. She was going home with him today. She would have to learn to live with that. The collar, and life as a witch in his household. She'd find her place there and learn soon enough that he wasn't a man to take advantage of witch shine and force his cock where it wasn't fully welcomed. Reaching around her waist, he unfastened the belt, pulled up all her clothes to the tight chest halter, and pulled down her pants and underwear, exposing more milky white skin to the air. Relaxed and unresponsive, her body allowed what her mouth fought. The delicate sweeping dip at the base of her spine was too enticing not to take a moment to revere. Taking off his gloves, he set them on the table and put his open hand on the small of her back. You'll get five, Calyx started to say, but the shine under his bare hand stopped him. Witch shine. There it was, her reaction to his allure. How was she doing that? How was she controlling what couldn't naturally be controlled? All of the colors of nature swirled around his hand, a pearlescent spark rising out of her skin where he touched her, a swollen, mature magic that sang to his senses. The girl sparkled, her energy rippling against him like the sun on a raging brook. He lifted his hand away. Color and light sank back into her skin, leaving her as plain as a void or the null she claimed to be. He put his hand back, and there it was, the allure rising in instant response. Skin to skin, he felt it now. It hadn't been there before, just the angry, defiant snap in her clear blue eyes. Maybe the collar weakened her ability to mask herself. Maybe it was the continued exposure to him or her new subservient position. Perhaps it was the skin-to-skin contact. He didn't know yet, but he would find out. Seeing it took his breath away. Although the young witchling was half his current age, which was the age he was in this lifetime, her brilliance stood out as powerful in both of their lived existence, even during the days when witches were common. Hidden in the backmost back end leftover village in all of Indario,
This girl glowed under his touch, like he'd never seen a woman glow. Kallax believed energy like hers extinct, conscripted by the patrols and eaten up by the Proctor's unification programs. Yet, here she was, under his protection, and now her body his to control. He'd been told magic would return, that it wasn't all dead. He hadn't believed it. No, not plain. Not a simple kitchen rat. Nothing about Annika was plain. Chapter 10. Annika. I'm not a witch. I'm a monster. He lit me up. Called up the stuff in me I wanted to sleep. That I didn't want to exist. Shit. He was gonna see. He would see. I could feel the monster inside of me leaking outward, reaching for him, welcoming him. My yelling weakened to choked groans and whines, trapped by his damn collar, forced over his lap, my naked butt to the air. Get your fat paws off me! Don't touch me! Stop touching me! I was prey, a bunny swatting at a wolf, trapped in a snare. Less. Because I was collared and couldn't move. Rasping his hand down my spine as far as it would go, down to the crease at the top of my ass, touching me, taking advantage of me, molesting me, doing everything I knew a mage would do. Ominously quiet. This was so bad. So bad. I couldn't see it, but I knew my shine must be leaking all over the damn place, escaping my control. Goose flesh rose everywhere his hand went, and I couldn't do anything to anything. I felt tears in my eyes as his touch opened up a whole new package of fears. He pushed more at my clothes, tugging the halter that bound my breast, as if to get access to the skin between my shoulder blades. I heard him mutter something. Then both his hands went back the other way, taking their time, sweeping over my waist, finding my hip bones, skin to skin, magic to magic. Waking up the sleeping nerve endings, stirring the shining brilliance of my denied heritage. Awake. I was more like my mother than I wanted to be. His touch felt so good. Every night and every morning I drank a special tea to dampen the evidence of my Indonesian birthright, camouflaging my response to male energy. The blend also affected my reproductive cycle because 50% of being a desirable female native Indonesian had to do with sex and baby making. All it took was the direct contact of a strong alpha mage, and the tea stopped working. I knew it, felt it. This was the moment I lost my agency and started to crave, need, want a male. Our magic resonated, his to mine. He would be able to see it happen under my skin. I felt it, a delicious hum following his hands, seeking in, sinking in, marking me. A happy, opalescent life show rose in reaction, just for him. As the life energy trapped in my body recognized a counterpart it could join with. After years of keeping it hidden, caged deep in my chest, in the darkest place I could put it, the hunter found the sibilant monster I hated most. And he called to her. Stop this. My voice was weak. I could barely get the words out. He wasn't listening. Pulling his hands away, he sat back for a moment. I felt his body expand and deflate as he took a deep breath. I couldn't give up. I just couldn't. Please. I don't want this. Let me go. Let me leave and you will never see me again. I don't want you or anyone. Do you really think I need a protector? I'm fine. I've been fine on my own for a long time, you know. My mother was never really good at mothering, so I can take care of myself. His hands returned, cutting off my words. Bent over his lap, helpless, my head was starting to throb with all the emotion, along with alarming tingles and sensations in the wake of his strokes. No. How could I escape this? My mother had been proud of her life energy. She told me it was a unique, untainted citrine rising in a halo from her skin. It saddened me that she lost it, but that she got Annika as a gift in return, so it was worth it. She walked the main lane of New Indio in her flowing lace dresses like a ghost, wearing her goofy, open, generous smile, hoping someone could see her. Mikos was the only mage who saw her. The man had a consortium-created machine for alien hunting and magicka energy. It wasn't for witches. He found my mother accidentally while scavenging for leftovers other sweeps left behind. He found her, and my mother was so thankful, she wept. Mikos made her prey to magic-hungry predators, but she didn't care. Didn't see it that way, when that's all I saw all my life. She loved being used and treated like she was nothing but a body and a battery. I missed her so much, but that was a part of my life I didn't miss, and one I couldn't revisit. I couldn't let a mage make me into a vacant, needy bit of sugar and shine. How could I survive it? That's what mages did. I know how they act. Mikos wasn't the only maid walking through our little lodge door. The disgusting maggot set up a service for renegade mages running from the Proctor's Unifier laws to use my mother for her magic. I lost count of how many of them pat me on the head and asked me how old I was, or how many of them took Berdana away for a little private chat. Tingles of sensation chased Kallax's touch, met it, wanted it, brought me to the present. My mother had told me I'd like it. One day a strong mage would touch me, and the natural exchange would happen no matter what I willed. I told her never, never. Look at you, Mocha Leech. How are you doing that? How do you contain it? He asked. I could hear the curious wonder in his voice. A man like him, he'd expect the simple act of his proximity to draw out a native born energy to make me ask him for my release. I wouldn't. Not me. The witch monster inside didn't control me, wouldn't force me on my back into opening my legs to controlling, narcissistic strangers. I don't want this. Doesn't it matter to you? I don't want this. Shh, little witch, he soothed. I'll give you your lesson and then all will be forgiven. I don't need a lesson. He didn't hear anything I said. This wasn't about a lesson. Not now that he was drawing out the color of my power to the surface of my skin. Yes, you do. That mouth of yours has been begging for a lesson since I first saw you. You need this so you know where you fit in my pack and my world. Your pack? Into your pack? I cried the words, thinking of the hounds outside, how they claimed I was one of them, how I knew them. Is that what he meant? The pack that had gotten me into this? I gave him another deep, woeful groan. Fitting into his pack, being one of him, was the very one of his? Well, it was the very last thing I wanted. On the scales of things I wanted in life, this was one of the never, ever, no end of it. Ready? He asked. I wasn't. He spanked me. A hard, sharp swat. I jerked, more from the push and pull of magic against my exposed skin than the force of his blow. Unable to fight, to twist away, To cover my exposed behind with my hands, I lay there, still trapped by his will, and took his spanking. The power inside me meeting his power, two swats, skin to skin, naked. It was pain to pleasure sensation that I could barely process. Three swats. I hated him. I would hate him forever. The third one stung. A voice in my head giggled. Not me. That wasn't me. I didn't want this. The fourth swat. That sound in my mind went louder. A yes of agreement. Tears on my face at the exposure, the humiliation of defeat. He delivered each open-handed swat with calculated timing. My bottom hot and stinging, he gave me the fifth. I know you don't like this, witchling, so you need to remember. I will not tolerate your defiance. I know you don't believe me, but a protector is the best thing for you in this world. I have never met a woman who needed one more. I have no intention of causing you harm. His hands watered again over my skin briefly before he pulled my pants up and released me from the demeaning position. You just hit me. My ass has handprints. How is that not harm? I asked. Those will fade. It looks like you might have bruises from actual harm. That I did not do. And since you are now mine, held by my will, I'm not going to need to do any actual harm to make you behave, am I? You degenerate dunghill. Listen to me. I don't want this. I'm not yours, I said between my teeth. No more name-calling, Annika. I am Calyx Argus, or Moado to you, if you prefer. Right now, you are not hurt. You are many things, angry, overwhelmed, terrified of yourself, of me, of the world. The hurts pass you by like the wind on your cheeks. You are accustomed to hurt that you have decided, so accustomed to hurt that you have decided to court it before you can catch it. It can catch you unawares. He was right about the last bit, but I wouldn't tell him that. I could feel the warm loop of ilium chain infused with his will against the underside of my chin where it had dipped from being forced bottom up. His magic, fire, incense, and will. I'm not a witch, so I won't witch for you. I won't. One side of his lips quirked up. You can't choose your nature. Though, apparently, you can hide it. That was something I didn't know. How long have you tried to change your nature and believed you could choose? Woman, don't you think I would change the whole world if it was that easy? A rumbling chuckle of amusement came out of him. The laugh insulted me. Easy? I wanted to step back away from him, his size, his scent, his high-handed manner. I was a sprite trapped in the paws of a giant bear who thought it was funny he had all the claws and teeth. You know that the First Order would find you, right? He said. The intellects at the consortium would love to play with you, little witch. You are illegal, and I'm supposed to give you over to them. There's a generous reward for females, unbonded females, untouched females. Little natives, just like you, are rare and precious and worth a good deal. He tapped a finger on my chin, and I couldn't even jerk away. Do it! Take me to them! Anything is better than a bully. That mouth of yours, he said. I can see I'm going to need a paddle, maybe a whole set of tools. He sounded like he relished the idea. I moaned. Oh, belly deep sound. I've been light with you, girl. Five little swats is nothing. Are you going to behave or do you need more? We can do it again. I won't say I think it's a bad idea.
His full lips didn't smile, but his green eyes quirked, wrinkling at the edges. What else could I do to make this man listen? Please. His hand went to the back of my neck, big, hot, holding all of me. It wasn't a hug, so why did that simple touch now feel like one? Who was this damn man? When was the last time anyone had touched me in kindness? The knot that had started tightening there with the first bit of weird tingle tightened hard, then loosened under his warming touch. It was suddenly easy to imagine his hand on every intimate part of my body, touching, cupping, embracing, everywhere, senses pulsating, skin tingling with awareness of the dominant male. Oh, he'd activated my nature, rubbing the stiff tendons like he had permission to, like he had rights, replacing discomfort with soothing touch. Opening his legs wide, the male pulled me closer to him, into the shelter of a big, rock-hard, knoll-shaped body. Caught. I was caught. His hands moved, brushed my jaw, wiped at the tears on my cheeks. Pretty little witch. He looked over at me, judging the damage, free with his hands. Who else knows who you are? He asked. I sighed. Only Bradonna knew, kind of. Not that we ever spoke of it. She hadn't seen me use magic or glow since way before her father was killed. Would this man hurt her? I didn't like Bradonna, but she was my only living connection to my history, my past, me. The mage hadn't exaggerated. I was illegal and valuable. It wasn't just the patrols who sought any containers of life force energy. Witches were rare now, and outnumbered by mages 5-1. All kinds of female magickers were rare. The natural balance of things corrupted to the point some races of sentient beings were going extinct. Answer me, he said. I bit my lips. His eyes dropped there, went back to mine. What will you do? I had to know. I didn't like Bradonna, but I didn't want my stepsister dead, not if it happened because of me. Don't answer a question with another question. Answer me. He hooked the silver circlet with his finger and tugged, reminding me of my new position. The chain could rule my body, but not my mind. The heat of his gaze, however, the aggressive intensity of him made me rethink this risk of mouthing off any more today. I just couldn't take it anymore. I didn't want him to keep touching me, didn't want to feel the things his touch did to me. I didn't want any of this, but here it is. He already made himself free with my person, invaded my space, stole control of my body, overpowered me, exposed my weakness. I couldn't stop him to save myself. How could I stop him to save anyone else? I'm not asking again, he said. His fingers traced a line on my cheek. The magic now swirled under my skin, wanting out. I could feel it. Shine glowing in response to the aura of his mage allure. The exchange of magic from witch to mage happened with touch. The kind of hot, needy touch that led to sex. Beautiful. So beautiful, Mokadalich, he whispered, watching the progress of his hands with fascination, while my heart climbed into my throat and more tears came out of my eyes. I didn't want to see. Couldn't look. Wouldn't. I knew what was happening. And I hated that he had caused it. His bare skin on mine, every touch brought on the witchy luminescence that I had denied existed. I needed him to stop seeing it too. Will you hurt the person? Tell me you won't hurt her. Her? Is it Bradonna then? At my hips now, his hands were big enough to curve around to my behind while his thumbs pointed toward the apex of my thighs. Tell me, I said, give me this. Tell me you won't hurt her. Do you have to break me in pieces to get your way? You said you'd take me to your home to wash dishes. Okay. I'll do that. Let me do that. You don't have to destroy me, take everything just to prove you can. Slipping into the indent of my waist, Calyx surrounded me with heat and a delicious masculine scent. His lips brushed my earlobe as he spoke, so soft. I felt the sparks of his touch down to my ankles. I won't hurt anyone who is not a threat to me or mine. But you, little witch, I'm going to break you in the best ways. You will beg me for it before I'm finished. He moved his hands and sat back, my shirts falling, just as his gnoll henchman rounded the corner. Stall showed, he nodded. Behind me there was an evaluating pause before the creak of heavy leathers indicated we were alone again. Right yourself, he said. Grateful for that command, at least, I was more than willingly finished with what he'd started and fixed my clothes. He stood up and left the room without a backward glance. Letting my eyes follow him, the way I imagined one watched a dangerous monster slink away, I tried to stay where he left me. I thought back to the first tingle in my feet, coming out of the dingy light of the kitchen in the dark of the alley to see the pack of Doom House for the first time, hugging one, the leader, like a memory, like she was a friend from my childhood. After a moment, my body, of its own accord, moved out of the room to follow Calyx Argus. And that was chapter 9 and 10. The next chapter, actually, I'm going to skip. Chapter 11. Chapter 11 is Bridonna, and it is Yes Addo is the name of it. And it is an encounter between Bridonna and Max. Max questions Bridonna in his own special way about Annika. Most of that information in this chapter is actually revealed in a conversation later, most of it. But it gives you some insights into Bridonna as a stepsister who's not quite kind to Annika. I wanted to let you know, as I was reading this, I have decided to kind of brand my stories in my stories as two different ways. And a friend said, well, maybe the colors weren't right, but I don't know. So if you ever see my logo, it's an omega sign, which someday I'm going to improve, but the colors are kind of white and a light gray with Isoellen written over it in Times New Roman in black, which kind of matches my book covers, at least for the Times New Roman. The omega sign's a little distressed, and at some point in time, I'm going to have that updated and more distressed out. And maybe thorns and roses, I don't know. But, you know, the omega sign is kind of my symbol. I don't know if you know this, but I actually have an omega tattoo that I got when I was 50 after Choosing Her Alpha came out. So it has come to me, I have realized reading this, and I'm also writing a story on my Ream account, links in the little about section of this podcast. I'm writing a story called The Commander, which is a post-apocalyptic alien invasion story. So you have Earth, and Earth has kind of destroyed itself with wars and nature and everything, and they are very much struggling to survive, and they've been fighting and infighting, and then aliens arrive, and they have been watching and waiting for their chance. The aliens arrive, and it's very easy for them to take over. The aliens are a very mixed bunch. There are different species in these aliens. They are not all the same kind. And among them are the Prime. And the Prime are very arrogant, and they kind of see what they want and take it. That is a very non-consent story. I wrote it actually seeing if I could write a slightly titillating interrogation and primal chase scene. It was just a test. People liked it enough. I've taken it to my ream. And now at the end of some of the chapters, you can actually vote on options to decide what's going to happen next. It's the choose what happens next smut story that you didn't know you wanted. However, it's dark. The beginning is dark. It is very non-consent. It is clear it's non-consent. And I realized through this spanking scene that caught that that was a very non-consent scene. She did not consent to be spanked. She does not consent to have the hidden part of her revealed. However, this is a slow burn romance and she will consent. The commander, which starts very strongly, very firmly, goes right into some really kind of possibly icky scenes for some readers, is a true dark romance, non-con, dub-con consent story, at least in the first 8 chapters, okay? First 12 chapters, really. This story, the romance is much longer, and I am not thinking of it as a non-consent story, even though that scene was very non-consent. That was more about teaching her not to mouth off, and that is more a symbol of what happens between men and women in their society. It is a non-consent society where women are very much overrun by men and controlled and have lost their agency and their power, which is her greatest fear. That is an Isawellan gray story. It's gray because my colors are gray. But a friend said, well, what about the 50 Shades connotation? Personally, I think most people are over that. I'm a different kind of writer. It didn't even occur to me that there would be a correlation. I love your input on that. Do you think the commander is Isawellan dark? Featuring all of Isawellan dark stories will feature non-consent, clear non-consent. All of Isawellan gray stories will feature morally gray heroes and some kind of dodgy situations. But in the end, the woman fully and completely is on board and choosing her hero. And so that's an Isawellan gray story. Still in a ruined world, of course, because, you know, that's what I love to write. Do you think the gray is not going to work? What do you think about the branding idea? I didn't realize that I could say I'm writing dark romance in all these different settings. But readers have told me that the consent issue is really a dividing line between whether or not they want to read a story. And although it's not a genre leap, you can have that trope in any kind of setting, story, romance. And I always thought dark romance gave me the open door to do whatever I wanted within it, because somewhere in the world, non-consent is happening, right? In all the worlds, non-consent is happening, just not between my main characters in the 12 sectors or some of the other stories in this story. And so I need to do a divide. And what's your thoughts? Do you have thoughts? I would love, if you're listening to this, you can comment on Podbean. You can comment on most listening apps. And I don't know if I'll get it on Apple. If you're commenting on Apple, I don't know. But please like and share. You know, all of that liking and starring and reviewing is a really, really positive thing for me. You can also review on Audible, because that's an Amazon review and I'll see that. So do give me some feedback what you think. You can also email me at isawellan.writes@gmail.com. I would love to hear what your thoughts are on that. The other thing is, I will have a book coming out this year. It's Redeeming Her Alpha, Merrick's Story. You should be following me on Amazon to make sure you get that notice, because I'm not doing a pre-order. I was so frustrated with my last pre-order, and I'm not doing it. One reason is because I've also done a Kickstarter, and some people have already gotten their hands on that one version of that book. And to them, as a reward for them, it is as their rights, first rights to read it. I'm just not doing a pre-order. So,
That's that. But that book is hopefully coming out. My publisher has it. I need to make a few changes to it. When she gets it back to me, then we'll do that, and then it'll get out, and hopefully I'll have at least one book out this year. You can check out my Ream for, actually, if you get one of the tiers on Ream, you will have access to the very rough draft of Redeeming Her Alpha, and you are welcome to read it there. I will be taking it down soon. About when arcs go out is when I'm taking that down. What else am I doing over on Ream? Well, I have The Commander, which I told you about that, and I'm trying to upload to that weekly. In the spring, I am planning on adding some new stories, but they're not new. They are extensions of things I've already written. I have readers always come to me, "What happened next? I didn't get enough. Are you going to write more?" I tend to stop writing when I feel like the tension in the story is resolved, that there's no more tension. I'm not very good at slice of life writing. I mean, I do it for backstory, but I don't do it for readers because I don't feel like it propels you forward into the next thing. And so I don't tend to write it, but I can. And I think it would be fun. So I'm doing that. I'm going to be adding to some of the stories that are already out. Orcai stories? Probably. Claiming Starlight? Probably. More 12 Sectors? Absolutely. So if there's a world that you love and have a passion for, you can check my Ream come this spring. Not till March at least, but I will be uploading some new content based on old content on my Ream. What is the other thing I wanted to tell you? So that's, when is Caught coming out? So I had Caught up to chapter 11, 15, I think, on Ream, and I took it down. Why did I take it down? Because this needs to be edited so badly, and there's so much repetition in it that it was bothering me, and I just got caught up in that and overwhelmed. Also, I'm still not really sure if I want Caught to be under Isawellen's name. I think it'll do better if I do a different name. I don't know. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, for downloading this content, for enjoying it. I'm not going to be reading chapter 11. I'm going to skip over that. You will have to become a club member if you want that. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it. And so the next chapter, I believe, is chapter 12, and that will be, I think, from Calyx's point of view. Thank you so much. Have a great day, and happy reading.